Okay. This is Dan Austin. The date is Sunday, November the 3rd, 1991. I am at the home of Mr. and Mrs. Al Fennar. F-E-N-N-A-R. His nickname is Cleffy, C-L-E-F-F-I-E, which is going to be a story in and of itself. Mr. Fennar, you said that you asked me a question about what I thought was a guy that played in the Negro Baseball League, and because you were probably testing me of what kind of stereotype and image that I had of that kind of player.
Yeah, that's right.
And I said I was thinking of a ball player that might have, a fellow that might have been born in Jersey or Detroit, maybe Southern California. And you came back and said, well, that's different because most of the people thought they were uneducated and born in the South.
That's true. But, for, I guess, a large part they were, but when I started playing with the black teams, because I come from the North, and I played with all white teams growing up.
Sandlot ball.
Right. And I played really, all those guys who went in the big leagues, you know, a lot of them went in the big leagues, mm-hmm. and some of them were great ball players. I played with guys who didn't even want to play in the big leagues. That's another story. I played with this one fella, a white fella, darn good ball player. He could play with any big league team that there was in those days, going back to the 30s.
This is during the middle of the Depression.
Right. Ah, that's it. That's the key right there. So he turned them all down. And the first thing you know, he was playing out in Indiana or somewhere with an industrial league team. Now, I was only a teenager. All right, said to him one day, how come everybody wants to play in the big leagues? Well, you turn them down, and here now you're going to go out in the Midwest and play with this team out here. Mm-hmm. It's a long time ago. I forget the guy's name, but mm-hmm. I forget. But this is the situation. And he told me something I never forgot. He says, well, you have to eat in December and January, too.
That's right.
And which shows what he was looking for was not the ball, the job that you got. When he played with that team out there, the Industrial Leagues, you know yourself that in the Cycle Page played in the Industrial Leagues out there. They paid it, if they had a championship game, they would pay Satch thousands of dollars to pitch that game to make sure they won it. The Industrial Leagues were big. But the point was you got a job in that company and you worked 12 months of the year.
Yeah, you were on the payroll there.
You were on the payroll.
Yeah, it could have been with John Deere Company. It could have been
that's an oil company. And I wound up playing with a couple of industrial teams myself in Jersey. I always remembered that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
these are good teams, these are not.
No, those industrial teams had some powerhouses
sure,
that toured the country.
They had some ball players.
And of course, in those days, ball players had to work during the off season.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, they didn't go to their agent and stockbroker.
Now you're talking millions of dollars. Now, in those days, you're talking hundreds of dollars. You know, they didn't make that much. But
so that guy gave you good advice.
Oh yeah, but the point that I asked you about before, because when I started playing with the black teams, most of the ball players were college men.
Really?
Black, yes. Black colleges, to be sure. You ever hear of Grambling?
You
heard of Grambling now, but I mean not in those days. I never heard of Grambling.
No.
I'm from New Jersey, New York area. I never heard of
there's Lincoln University.
Lincoln, I know
in
about,
Pennsylvania.
But there are a lot of schools.
Alabama A&M.
Yeah.
Tennessee A&M.
That's right. A lot of schools. I can't even think of them now, but kind of all these guys were college players. That's where they learned to play ball, most of them. But there was nothing to do, no work, if you had a degree from a college, especially a black college in those days, that's where you make money. You learn how to play ball on the ball field, is playing ball. They're all college men, a lot of them. You'd be surprised.
Well, that was
really amazing.
Because most of the white ball players in Major League were lucky to be out of high school.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't until after World War II that you found a few college graduates.
You know, well, like my wife can tell you this, the old days when you had a party, a family get together, and you'd start about talking about different things, somebody eventually would say, well, we got the college, we got doctors carrying bags down Penn Station. That's true, because I went the Penn Redcaps, Pennsylvania Redcaps. Mm-hmm. You know them, right?
Yes.
They asked me 1 year. I wasn't playing with them. I was playing with another team, but this was a postseason game. They were playing in Jacksonville, Florida. And they asked me to go on the trip with them. Mm-hmm. Their second baseman refused to go south. You know, you didn't want to come south in those days. I'm talking about 1932, 3, 4, somewhere in there. He refused to go south, so they asked me to go. And I was, what was I, 19, 20 or so? I just went for the heck of it. And that, playing with the Penn Redcaps, those guys are carrying bags down to Penn Station for a quarter. They're all college men, college graduates, I mean. And the guys on the ball team, college graduates. Most of them knew each other from college. And that was a learning experience I went through. And those guys, they could play ball, and it's really amazing. But that's true.
I doubt if many baseball fans are even aware of what you just said, let alone baseball historians.
They were college men, a lot of them.
Were they from black colleges?
Black colleges, that's what I mean. They were all from black mm-hmm. colleges. And this is about the only way they could make a living, carrying the luggage down there. Now the Depression was on. They all had nice apartments. Some of them had cars. You know, there was a Depression, but you know, they were carrying bags. That was the best thing I could do in those days. You're going back to the Depression, and I say I was lucky to be able to play ball because it was a good experience. I came right out of high school, right out of George Cooke High School.
In New York City?
In New York City.
Let's go back to your life. Your birth date is?
May 12th, 1911.
Okay, so you were born just before the outbreak of World War I?
Yeah, that's right.
In Jersey City?
I was born in North Carolina, but my family at the time was living in West New York, New Jersey.
Where is that? I guess across the Hudson River.
Across the Hudson River. Well, it would be about five miles north of Jersey City. Mm-hmm. And about 2 miles north of Hoboken. You know where Hoboken
is. Okay. So you had a direct shot to the old polo grounds.
Oh, sure.
What'd your dad do?
He was a musician. That's where I got the name Cleffy.
I was going to ask, okay. And how'd you get the name Cleffy? You grew up with music?
No. The black musicians had a club. It was a musicians club where they owned two or three buildings on 53rd Street in New York, and this is where they practiced and met, and it was their business headquarters, and my father was a general manager. Mm-hmm. And he made all the bookings. This is where they hired out bands. In other words, people called in, they wanted, you didn't have the TV and the jukebox yeah. and all that mm-hmm. in those days. If you had an affair, you wanted a band mm-hmm. of six or eight pieces. It's a wedding, it's a bar mitzvah, whatever. And this is what he did as a general manager. He arranged for people.
So he met some great musicians because there was a lot of
and that was the
musicians come out of Harlem that played in some of those clubs
up
there.
Well, they had hundreds of musicians in the Clef Club, and he would have a band playing, and they'd ask him how many people you want, and he'd say, well, how many people are going to be there, and he'd arrange to send them 10 men or 20 men or something like that.
Well, how'd you get Cleffy?
The name of the club was the Clef Club, and I was born on a night that they had a big affair at Carnegie Hall, and when they announced it at the Carnegie Hall, I guess my mother or somebody in the family had sent a telegram to my father, who was there. They said, well, let's name the kid Clef after the Clef Club, because this was a big one of the biggest affairs they ever had at Carnegie Hall back in 1911. That's a long time ago. Yeah.
That's right.
So the family, their name stuck, Cleffy.
Although your given name is Albertus.
Given name is Albertus.
Named after your father or grandfather?
Named after a relative, a cousin in Philadelphia whose name was Alberta. But she was one of the favorites of the family.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. She was a school teacher.
So you grew up in West New York City.
New
Jersey.
Right.
Surrounded by music, at least the business of music.
Right.
And played a lot of sandlot ball growing up as a kid.
Right.
And going over to, I guess, the polo grounds to see a few games.
You know what my mother used to say? I never saw anybody take as many bands as you. Because we'd go out and play ball in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm. All day long.
Play ball, play a game. Come home, and in those days, you had to light a gas burner to heat the water so you could take a bath.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take a bath, sit down, have a little lunch, and the doorbell would ring with another ball team. They asked me if I wanted to play. Well, so I went out and played another game. Come home. Take another bath. My mother would say, I never saw anybody take as many baths as you. But that used to happen, you know. Uh-huh. We'd be sitting down having lunch, and another team would come by. I guess they wanted another player or something. But baseball was the whole thing in those days. I was just talking to my wife the other day. We were talking about the commissioners talking about playing doubleheaders.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all right, that was... In the old days, that was a big thing. Everybody was waiting for Sunday. They go see, doubleheader, games for one.
That's right. Two games for one ticket.
Yeah, two games. Everybody playing a doubleheader.
Now they were
the teams that had the black teams I played with. Mm-hmm. We played a doubleheader almost every Sunday, and a Sunday night game.
And
a Sunday night game.
Triple header.
And I was still doing that when I was married. I used to get up on Sunday, leave my wife 8 o'clock in the morning, and not see her till 3 o'clock the next morning.
So the kids went around the neighborhood recruiting you. You're well built. You got a lot of chest strength. You got big arms. And they must have seen a good kid.
It's bigger now than it was then.
This part, yeah.
Well, I'm not talking about it. I'm only talking about the chest and up and the biceps. You played infield.
Yeah.
Second base,
but when I started playing with the black teams, they put me at shortstop. They saw that I could cover a lot of ground,
uh-huh.
So right away they wanted me to be
shortstop. You had good lateral movement.
Right, yeah. But I like to play third, too. I played them all.
So you played a lot of sandlot ball. Evidently some scouts saw you and say, this guy has got the talent. We're going to sign him up.
Well, in West New York, there was a big team, the West New Yorks.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big semi-pro team. They played the House of David.
Mm-hmm.
They played the Lincoln Giants. They played the Bacharach Giants. And they played all the big New York Fire Department in those days had a team.
Mm-hmm.
New York Police Department. All good teams. And they played the West New Yorks. When I was growing up, I played in what we used to call the preliminary game to the big game in West New York.
Like a wrestling match, like a boxing match.
Yeah, well, we played at 1 o'clock, and then the big game was at 3 o'clock. Or we would be all the local kids, you know what I mean? Kids from around there. Hmm. Yeah, we played the Plymouth game, and that's how they saw me play. And the Lincoln Giants told me to keep in touch with them. The Lincoln Giants. Did you ever hear of them?
No, I haven't heard of the Lincoln Giants. I remember...
Okay. The Lincoln Giants came through to play in West New York, and they told me to keep in touch with them and for when I graduated from high school, which I did.
Uh-huh.
When I graduated from high school, that would have been 1931. I then contacted them. I had a bad knee on account of football. I wasn't at full strength, you know. So I contacted them, and I went on a trip with them. They had an old rambly bus. We went to Philadelphia and played around there and came back to New York. And then they told me, don't play any more baseball this year. And they told me how to keep in touch with them over the winter for spring training the following year. And that's what I did. How I kept in touch with them was through Fats Jenkins and Bill Yancey. You ever hear those names?
No, I haven't.
Bill Yancey was the shortstop for the Lincoln Giants. Fats Jenkins was the left fielder. And they also played with the Renaissance basketball team.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Okay, and that's how I kept in touch with them. They arranged for me to have a pass, and I used to go to every Renaissance home game.
So
during the winter. That's during the winter. Uh-huh. The next spring, Fats and Billy Yancey told me what to do, where they were working out, and that's how I went. And that was the year that they became the Black Yankees.
Is that when they became the Black Yankees?
Yeah.
The New York Black Yankees.
It was the Lincoln, the franchise was Lincoln Giants, or Lincoln Stars, or Lincoln Giants.
Uh-huh.
But they became the Black Yankees that rookie year that I went with them.
Well, you said franchise. Was there some kind of legal structure that said...
Well, with the state, you have to take out a... franchise if you have a ball team.
That's right.
And you play under that name and so on.
And one of the guys on the players would act as a business manager and general manager, like
not
a couple
one
of guys.
The players. No, they had the Lincoln.
Who owned the Lincoln Giants?
Millionaire. Nat Strong.
Hmm.
He was down. He had his offices down around City Hall, New York. I had to go down there and sign a contract when I played with the Black Yankees. With the Brooklyn Royal Giants.
How much did they pay you?
$150 a month.
During the Depression? Pretty good.
Good money.
Good money.
Right. $150 a month.
Plus travel, except when you were home.
Yeah, my wife and I were talking about that the other day. You were up at Cooperstown.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear Hank Aaron say they got $2 a day eating money?
I've heard that said before.
Yeah, he said he was talking about playing with the Black team, and Hank said, well, $2 a day. He said he was hungry all the time. But I think Ida and I were talking about this the other day. We got $6 a day. We got $6.
Hey, that's good food allowance.
Three meals.
Yeah, that's for your food all day. That's for your food. That's for whatever you want. That's how we... $6 for the day. In those days, that would cover it.
You bet it would. But that's only when you were on the road.
On the road, yeah.
Not when
you
were
only
home.
Got that on the road, uh-huh. Not when at home, you know.
So you got a beat-up old bus and off to Philadelphia?
Yeah, and as I say, we went to Philly, and then I didn't do anything the rest of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And the winter, I just... And the knee was fine following the year.
Who were some of the players on that first New York Black Yankee team? If you had the starting lineup starting at...
If you had the starting lineup, you would have Fats Jenkins playing left field and leading off. Teddy Page playing right field and batting second. Clint Thomas, you know Clint Thomas, right? Batting third, yeah, you heard of him. He was a great, great batting third and playing center field. Oh, he could play center field. I always say Willie Mays wasn't the first good black center field. Boy, we had a bunch of them. And Clint Thomas was fantastic. And George Scales, big tubby, playing second base and batting fourth. Probably Showboat Thomas, batting fifth, playing first base. Mm-hmm. Your catcher. Did you know, you said the Kansas City Monarchs. You know about Kansas? Who was the manager?
Ah, I know the owner because I used to go to his bowling alley, but I don't remember the catcher.
Well, they had two of the best catchers in the world on that Black Yankees team. Mm-hmm. Frank Duncan was the manager of the Kansas City Monarchs for years. Well, he was one of the catchers on the Black Yankees. Mm-hmm. And the other catcher, I can't think, but he was great.
Who was your third baseman?
I guess I was playing third.
You were playing third.
I'm trying to think who was playing third. I guess I played third.
And a couple of your pitchers.
Now, Bill Holland. Mm-hmm. Bill Holland was a good pitcher. You ever hear of Tex Burnett?
Yes.
Tex Burnett, yeah. He was a catcher. Mm-hmm. Another cat. I couldn't think of him. But the pitcher was, one of the pitchers was Bill Holland. And we had an old man who could pitch. Connie Rector. I don't think if he threw the ball, he couldn't break the glass in that thing over there. But try to hit him, you know, one of those guys.
Yeah, a lot of junk pitches.
Yeah, so all you need was a good infield.
Yep.
Yeah.
And where'd you get your uniforms? Now, you take your name after the Yankees.
Okay.
Now, you had to get permission from the New York Yankees to use that.
We got the uniforms. We had the uniforms.
You got their uniforms?
Yeah. We had the uniforms.
Well, you got their old uniforms.
We got the uniforms. We got the uniforms from the year before.
And whose uniform did you get?
In that book, in The Invisible Men. The guy who wrote the book came in the room, and we were talking about the same thing. The ball players were talking about the same thing. And they said, gee, I didn't know that. I said, sure, I had Lou Gehrig's pants. And he's got it in the book there, and he don't even know what he's talking about. He's got it in there. He doesn't know what we were talking about. Because I, with these big legs, you know, I was having a hard job finding a pair of pants. And one of the guys, here, try these on, kid. Threw them over there like that, and I tried them on. I said, these work. These are pretty good, you know. And here, the inscription in there was sewed. And it was Lou Gehrig.
Lou Gehrig's pants.
Yeah. That was back in 1932.
Those old heavy wool jobbies.
Oh, yeah, weren't they something?
Yeah, sweat a lot in those things.
Yeah, and the uniforms only had numbers. They didn't have any names.
And no names.
Yeah, they only had numbers.
Of course, numbers didn't come about until the late 1920s with Babe Ruth.
Yeah, they had numbers. They didn't have any names. Right?
So did you get the New York insignia?
I had the regular uniform. Everything. Mm-hmm. We had the regular uniform.
Pinstripes and all.
I can see it now. They brought in a bunch of pants like this. They had the string around. They just opened the pants, opened the string, and the pants fell all over the place, all cleaned and everything. They were Yankee uniforms.
This one?
Yeah.
Both home and road?
No, we just had the home uniforms.
Just the home ones.
And, you see how that came about. When the Lincolns Stars became the Black Yankees. One of the owners of the Black Yankees, I don't know whether he had anything to do with the Lincoln Stars, mm-hmm. was Bill Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Bojangles.
Bojangles?
Bojangles, yeah.
He was an old Yankee ball fan.
Oh, he loved the Yankees, and he was a great friend of Jake Rupert.
Bojangles, Bill Robinson.
Yeah. He was one of the owners of the Black Yankees. And I believe that's how he got the uniform. He could get anything from Jake Rupert. Babe Ruth would hit a homer and he'd jump up on the dugout roof and start dancing and lead everybody in a cheer. Yeah, those were good days. He used to go to the ball games with us, and he would challenge anybody to race him, and he would run backwards.
Really?
Yeah. Bojangles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he'd run backwards. But, you know, if you did a 50-yard race, you'd have to give him 10 yards or something. But just to entertain the fans, like, we always played doubleheaders in between the doubleheaders.
Have a little entertainment.
Yeah.
Tell me, did many, I want to ask you this before we go on to your baseball career, did many women go to the ball games in those days, or were it just men?
A few women, not very
many. Not many
women,
no. That's come just within the last 20, 25 years.
No, before that, It started, it grew, but not too many.
Many white people come out to see the games?
All right, what games?
What games?
Yeah.
The games you played.
Yeah, but I mean, we played all over. All right, let's say we played in Philadelphia. 90% of the people were white.
Really?
Yeah.
There wasn't
that
way.
And if you played in West New York, 99% of the people were white. And if you played in where else did we play? We played all around. We played in Albany, New York, 99%. We played in Burlington, Vermont.
Did you travel? By buses all the way?
No, the old Lincoln Stars had a bus. The Black Yankees had a bus. The Brooklyn Royal Giants. Let me tell you why I went with the... I left the Black Yankees the first year.
You left them?
I left, yeah, the first year I played with them. And there's no hard feelings. It's a beautiful system that they had. As a rookie, now I'm playing with the Black Yankees, I got half a share. In other words, if we played the Bushwhips, and each player got $40 for that game, I got 20. That's the rookie. The rookie got 20. Got half a share. In the meantime, the Brooklyn Royal Giants notified the Black Yanks that they wanted me to play shortstop. So they told me, you can go with the Brooklyn Royal Giants. So I had a couple other teams I could have gone with. So I went with the Brooklyn Royal Giants, and I got a full share. What you would call a full share, but of course, that's where I signed for $150 a month.
So there was no trade? Brooklyn had to trade somebody?
No, nothing.
No reserve clause?
They helped each other out. If the Crawfords, because they told me, the Crawfords were coming through and they're looking for an infielder. Mm-hmm. They alerted, you know. The Crawfords will be in next week and they're looking for an infielder. And being a rookie, I mean, What you read in the paper today about all the goings-on and the hard feelings, it was nothing like that. No. Nothing like that. It was really nice. They would look out for each other, you know. There was a team up in... Somebody was talking to me about that the other day. There was a team that played... Mohawk Giants. You ever hear of them?
Yes.
Okay. When they played, like, Albany, Schenectady, Utica, all up there along the Erie Canal, they had that all sewed up.
Yep.
When they come to New York, they come down here, and some of the guys were working like that, or their wives didn't want them to leave for, you know, they'd come to spend a week or 2 weeks. They always needed ball players. You know, so they always could get extra ball players, you know, round up, get 9 men, 10 men.
So as you played longer, some of the guys you might know that were coming up, you would recommend, hey, you sign this young guy up.
Yeah, he's got right. You need an infield, and they would talk, and they would find somebody for him. Yeah. I mean, you had to be a certain caliber, you know, you understand. And that was the main thing, as long as you could.
Now, how'd you assess? Now, You can take a guy that, hey, he's got a good batting eye, he's got good speed, but does he have it inside? Now, how'd you judge that?
I don't think there was too much of that. I did that with my little league teams. Whenever with my teams, I did that. I very much checked the character of a kid more than his ability.
How'd you do that?
Oh, you can tell. You can tell who's genuine and who isn't. The funny thing about it, my friend Mr. Garrity, who was ran the athletic program, always said that I picked the wrong kid one time. He said, oh, you've got the wrong kid. Boy, was he ever wrong. I never discussed it with him, but was he ever wrong? The kid I picked looked like a little... He looked like Kirby...
Puckett.
He looked like that.
Kind of short and stocky. Looked like
Didn't even look like a ball player. Didn't even... But he had the brains, and he made the plays that this other kid never would have been able to make. But the other kid was built, nicely built.